a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
All right, we are ready. Emmett, you have not responded to an email that I think Cindy sent out last week, which was specially prepared for you. There were a number of other people that did, but you did not respond. So I don't know whether you got the email from Cindy. So just check that, because that schedule was made available for you. I think there was only like four or five spots, and I think they may already be taken. So anyway, just check that. Check your email, and hopefully you've got that there. And there is one person. Let's see, Rachel Robinson. If you're on here, we will be answering your question today on the IADFW later on today. All right. Okay. So for the question that we're going to talk about now, I've got a couple of things that there's a couple of things that I really want to talk about. Unfortunately, I am not in a. I think that right now to talk about it may be somewhat premature, because there's a lot of people that are going to be interested in it, and then unfortunately, the way things work out, life gets in the way, and I can't get to it when I say it's going to happen, and or due to other clinical obligations and such, so things get delayed. So I'm not going to announce it yet, but there is going to be a webinar coming up very, very soon that I think is going to be critical for pretty much anybody with any type of chronic disease. But I think that this is, it really comes down to one thing that's the most important. What's really interesting about this one thing, and I'm not going to go into a lot of details, but what's really interesting is that not only is it the most important and the most significant supplement, I believe, that is on the planet, it actually happens to be the first line of drug that certain people believe is the first line of drug therapy for certain types of acute heart conditions, okay? So I'll just leave it at that. Some of you may already know what I'm talking about. And it is a very, very critical component, and I think it's a chronic lack of this that probably helps to contribute to many of the pathologies that we see today. And the good news is that if you're a member of the IADFW and you bought the MAP to Get Ahead program, if you follow those two simple changes to implement in your life, that'll change your life. The two simple changes to implement into your life. If you take those, there are five things on that video, although it says two simple things, there's actually a total of five, but three of them are so simple, you know, it's like effortless, but two of them, it does take a little bit of effort, but they're simple. So if you're already doing that, you're already covering this portion, because you're actually, two of those five steps are actually naturally increasing this substance in your body. Now, the reason I'm not going to talk about it is because obviously I'm going to build up a little bit of excitement about it, and some of you may know what I'm talking about. Most of you probably don't. And what we don't know about this essential element that is considered, in my opinion, to be the most important supplement on the planet, that there are certain components of this that in modern medicine have been completely, completely ignored. But the work of multiple Nobel laureates that go back almost 100 years supports not only the theories that I have, but actually validate this on a medical level, on a scientific level, that far supersedes any justification for any of the other drug modalities that are being utilized for many of the chronic diseases. I won't go into specifics. When I do the IADFW component later on today, I'll mention maybe a little bit more about this. But regardless, it is validated. It is been scientifically and clinically shown to be more than valid. And I think that we probably need to make conscious efforts to increase the component, these components in our body, not this specific component, but there's certain other components that we can take that will enhance the effects of this single most important thing. So we'll talk more about it. Again, if you are, if you're in possession of the two simple changes to implement in your life, if those two simple changes video, if you have it, watch it again and make sure that you're doing every one of those five steps, because two of those steps, as I said, naturally are increasing this, and actually in some way, fashion, or form, the other three indirectly, maybe on a secondary or tertiary level, are probably increasing this component within your body anyway. So at that point, I will stop and we will go into the question that I'm going to answer. And that question was posed by Denny. Sorry, last name is Denny. It's K. Carolyn Denny. And I'll just call you K. And K said, my husband was diagnosed last month with multiple myeloma. Oncologists want to start him on chemo, stem cells, and pills. The cancer goes into remission but comes back, and then the treatment start all over again. I think we are unsure whether to do this treatment, and once in remission, start getting his immune system healed to kill the cancer cells. The doctors give him 1 to 2 years without the chemo, etc. I have a neuro problem myself and a lung issue I've been putting on the back burner due to the doctor saying I would need 3 antibiotics daily for a whole year. And then she says Mycobacterium avium complex. I really have no symptoms to speak of with the MAC. This was found on a CT scan during a heart attack 2 years ago. Sorry to write so much initially. I just need to help my husband of 41 years first. Okay, so again, because we're on a live broadcast that is not, since this isn't the IADFW broadcast, I can't answer specific questions, but I can talk about some general components. I thought this was a good question to answer because I just picked this one arbitrarily. There were probably close to 30 questions like this that have been submitted in the last maybe 30 days, you know, 30, maybe 40 questions like that. Very similar, not necessarily about this type of particular cancer, not that they had multiple myeloma or anything, but this type of general question. So I thought we would talk a little bit in generalities about cancer. And this is my opinion about cancer. And I think it comes down to many of the nuances that we approach various disease processes with, depending on the doctor. Each doctor that you go to has their own nuances, right? They have their own belief systems. Most people fall into one of two categories. So there's the conventional intervention component, which is primarily chemo and radiation with the use of the surgery if necessary. And then you've got the non-conventional, which is maybe using other adjuvants to facilitate, but they may believe in low-dose insulin-potentiated chemotherapy or you know other various natural forms combined with some type of conventional treatment, which is commonly referred to as integrative therapy. I don't like the word alternative. I never have, because what we do is not alternative. To me, it's the primary, secondary, and tertiary options. And if none of those work, then maybe look at some of the other ones, but that's just my opinion, right? So just remember that this is a public broadcast. So pretty much what I'm gonna say is my opinion. I don't expect you to take what I'm gonna say and accept it, but it's just my opinion. So there's no medical advice being given on this broadcast, all right? So I'm gonna ask a couple of general questions and maybe you guys can answer these general questions for me, and let's see. I'm pretty sure that most of you are already going to end up understanding what I'm going to say. And most of you may even know which direction I'm going to go in this, but I would like for you guys to participate and and give me the answers that you think would be the right answers to the questions that I'm going to ask, right? So when an individual has cancer, my first question is, how long prior to that cancer becoming evident did the cancer start? How long prior to the actual diagnosis of cancer was it that the cancer actually began? When did the process begin, right? That's my first question. So anybody have an opinion on that or an answer for that, share it with me, please. And of course, on Instagram too, if you have a answer to that, if you have a thought process or you think you know the answer to that, give me your answers, all right? Okay, so a healing place, 314 says up to 10 years prior, all right? Kim said years. Barbara says several years. Tiffany said 7 years. Louise said cancer started years earlier. Okay, so you guys all have the same idea. I like Tiffany, that you've got a very specific 7 years. Exactly, I like that. Okay, so really the answer is that Andrea said 5 to 10 years before. So there's a number of different people that have the same type. You know, you have the similar type of thought processes right now. So the answer is it all depends on the type of cancer, but certain cancers, more than other cancers, actually started way, way before. All cancers started years before. So if you're looking at something like, say, lung cancer, it probably started anywhere from 5 to 7 years prior to the actual diagnosis. If you're looking at something like prostate cancer, it could be 15 to 20 years before. Colon cancer is easily 10 years before. Breast cancer is 5 to 10 years before. So it all depends on the type of cancer, but each of these organ systems that we just discussed and all the other ones that we haven't discussed that actually end up being susceptible to the cancer was not something that popped up the day before, the week before, the month before, okay? It started years before. So that's the first question. Second question, what was the cancer, what was the cell that's cancerous, what was a cancer cell before it became a cancer cell? In other words, a cancer cell, before the onset of cancer, what was that cell? Okay, so more people gave me answers about how long before the cancer started, so that's excellent. So the second question was how long before, or I'm sorry, the second question was when a cancer cell is formed prior to its formation, prior to becoming cancerous, what was that cell? And that might seem like a pretty obvious question rhetorical type question, but Andrea said a normal cell, and RAS NGO on Instagram said normal cell as well. Now, a healing place 314 interestingly said abnormal question mark. Now, a healthy cell, yes, exactly, a healthy cell. It was a normal cell, it was a healthy cell. Barbara said the same thing, healthy cell, normal cell. Now, Kim asked a damaged cell question mark, and that's what somebody else over here said also. The question was it an abnormal cell? Now, you know, Richard said an abhorrent cell. Actually, no, Richard, it wasn't. Emmett said an abnormal cell. Actually, it wasn't. It was actually a normal cell. Now, from the time that it goes from a normal cell to a cancer cell, yes, it becomes an abhorrent, abnormal, something has been thrown off, and then it becomes a cancer cell. So there is an evolutionary process that the cell goes through, but it's a cell that's normal, healthy, then something happens to it that it becomes an abnormal cell. And then from that point, certain components start to take place, and those abnormal cells then become cancerous cells, and that's when they end up getting diagnosed after a number of years, when a sufficient number of those abnormal cells have accumulated and formed a mass that's now either palpable or, you know, it's causing some other kind of problem, or it's painful, or it's picked up on a CAT scan, or whatever the case may be. So it was normal cell, and then it becomes a cancer cell. In the process of becoming a cancer cell, it goes from a state of normalcy to a state of abnormally functioning metabolism, or an abnormal cell. And then from there, it goes to becoming a cancer cell. So the last thing that we're going to talk about, last question I'm going to ask you is, a cancer cell that, say, is a cell that is, I say, glioblastoma cell, which is a brain cancer, or pancreatic cancer cell, or a hepatocellular cancer cell, a liver cancer cell, or cancer in the breast cancer cell, or a prostate cancer cell, what are the main characteristics that make it different? besides the fact that it's one in the prostate, one's in the breast, one's in the brain, besides that, what is the difference in these different cancer cells? Okay, that's the next question. Okay, so very, very interesting answers. So what is the difference besides the tissue in which a cancer cell develops that makes a prostate cancer cell different from a breast cancer cell, different from a brain cancer cell, different from a pancreatic cancer cell, different from a hepatocellular carcinoma cell, a liver cancer cell versus pancreatic cell, whatever the case may be. And so Angie says autoimmune disease. So it is an immune dysfunction, but my question was what makes it different, right? So we'll come back to the autoimmune disease component here in a second, because that's an interesting, I think that's deserves a response. It's an interesting comment, and you might be actually more on track than you realize. Debbie said blood supply, that's the difference, that there's a difference in blood supply. So that's interesting. Kim said it does not die. Apoptosis does not occur, according to Andrea. They're anaerobic, they're weaker, they lack oxygen, rate of duplication. Tiffany said nothing. All right, so let's see over here what people are saying. Grow faster than normal, okay. I saw your TTAC in Grapevine, Texas. They became invisible for the body to detect and destroy. Well, yes, that is very true. That is true. Multiplies quicker, uptakes glucose. Okay, so your answers, this kind of is funny because when you're taking a high school exam or a college exam, you know, they will ask a question in a certain manner and people will put down the answer. And even though they understand what the answer is, they didn't listen to what the question was. I said, what makes a cancer cell that's pancreatic cancer versus a liver cancer versus a brain cancer versus a breast cancer versus a prostate cancer, what makes it different is my question. So that was kind of like a trick question, right? I didn't say what are the similarities, what's the difference is my question. And a lot of you guys have answered uptakes glucose, you know, multiplies quicker. And these are all components that make a cancer cell cancerous. But a person by the name of Acop said, yes, nothing is different. And I saw somebody here, I think it was Tiffany. Tiffany said nothing. And that is the actual correct answer. The difference between a cancer cell that's in the pancreas versus a liver cancer versus a breast cancer versus brain cancer, or any type of cancer, there is nothing, and remember I said, besides being in the tissue that it's occurring in, whether it's occurring in the pancreas or occurring in the brain, besides that, there is nothing difference in those cancer cells. They are the same. Now somebody would say, how can you say that? They're not the same, they're a different cell. Of course, a different cell, that's why I said they come from a different tissue, but the common characteristics are the same. And many of you listed those common characteristics, which are the same for all cancers. So, uptakes glucose, perfect. Cancer is an up glucose metabolizer. It's an obligate glucose metabolizer, which means that it has to run on sugar, okay? That came from A Healing Place, right? Tracy Revy said it multiplies quicker. So that's uncontrolled cellular proliferation. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's another common characteristic. They are reproducing much, much faster. All right. Somebody else may have said that. It does not die. Kim said it does not die. That's the same thing. It's an uncontrolled cellular proliferation. It's constantly growing. That's exactly right. Kim also said it's an anaerobic metabolizer. That's exactly right. All cancer cells are obligate anaerobic metabolizers. They're obligate glucose metabolizers, meaning that they need glucose to metabolize. They are also an obligate anaerobic metabolizer, meaning that they need an oxygen-free environment in order for them to continue to perpetuate, right? Let's look at some of the other. They lack oxygen, Barbara said. That's exactly the same thing. It's an obligate anaerobic metabolizer. Richard said rate of duplication. Again, uncontrolled cellular proliferation. They grow in a low pH. Okay, so cancer is more prone to be prevalent in a higher acidic environment. So the lower the pH, the more acidic it is. So yes, that's true. That's typically true. let's see, Luis said that they're weaker. Okay, so cancer cells are actually, I wouldn't say that they're weaker, they're actually more resilient because they've gone into a state of uncontrolled cellular proliferation. But there's a couple of things about this concept of weaker, and we'll talk about that just in a second. Now, Andrea said apoptosis does not occur. And this kind of goes back to Angie's comment about the autoimmune disease. So let me just make sure. Are some organs more susceptible to cancer than others? Absolutely. Something to do with lack of anti-tumor necrosis factor. Very, very interesting comment, Tracy, about this anti-tumor necrosis factor, but that's actually more misinformation that's been perpetuated. Okay, so really what it comes down to, and here are the common characteristics. This comes back to what Andrea said. Apoptosis. What is apoptosis? Apoptosis is programmed cell death. It is the normal, inherently functional state of a cancer, of a healthy cell, to self-destruct in the case it becomes abnormal, i.e. cancerous or something else. What is the purpose behind apoptosis, programmed cell death? That doesn't make any sense. Okay, this is what it is. Here's a cell, it's normally functioning, but there's a mechanism in place that if something becomes aberrant, something becomes abnormal, something goes awry, there's something that makes the cell start to function abnormally. In order to protect the whole, the cell itself will sacrifice itself, will self-destruct in order to prevent an impact that's negative to the surrounding cells, to the whole, to the whole organism. So the cell self-destructs, kills itself in order to preserve the rest. That's called apoptosis. That is programmed cell death. In cancer, it's suppressed. So there's a suppression of apoptosis. That programmed cell death doesn't occur like it's supposed to. So we are all the time going through a process of apoptosis, that is apoptotic mechanisms in the body constantly, all right? But when that apoptosis becomes suppressed, goes down, that means that programmed suicide, that programmed cell destruction is no longer occurring like it normally should. It's slowed down, it's suppressed, it's not functioning. So the cells will not self-destruct as they normally would in case something abnormal happens. So now here's a cell, it becomes abnormal, it starts to rapidly grow, and then the suppression of apoptosis prevents it from becoming from destroying itself, becoming, you know, self-destruction. So that allows that aberrant cell that's now become abnormal to continue to perpetuate faster and faster and faster. And that's where, those are the common characteristics of cancer, what I call the common characteristics of cancer. And so there's many of them, but let's talk about just a couple of those in a general fashion. So you have suppression of apoptosis, that means a reduction in the programmed cell death. You have an obligate glucose metabolization state, which means that they need sugar to survive, they have to have sugar. They're an obligate anaerobic metabolizer, which means they're obligated to grow in an oxygen-free environment. If you put oxygen inside an environment where there's cancer, the cancer can't survive. It hates oxygen. So that's the third one. And then there's a couple of other components that I actually, if you have the Truth About Cancer DVD, or if you are a member of the IEDFW and you've seen the DVD, Cancer, The Untold Truth, that's streaming on your dashboard under videos, education videos. If you watch that, there's a slide presentation on my the cancer DVD. And in that slide presentation, I have a lot of the common characteristics of cancer. And that's really how we approach dealing with cancer. We don't care whether it comes from the pancreas or from the brain or from the liver or from the breast. Or it doesn't matter to me. I'm looking at the common characteristics of cancer, and that's what I zero in on. So now coming back to the original question that was posed about Kay and her husband of 41 years who was recently diagnosed with multiple myeloma, and it keeps coming back. And so those are the types of questions she was asking. She was concerned about, you know, what should we do? And then I believe the question was, this cancer goes into remission but comes back, and then the treatment start all over again. We're unsure whether to do this treatment, and once in remission, start getting his immune system healed to kill the cancer. Now, I want you to think about that statement. And there's some pretty obvious inherent flaws in that statement itself. But in order to make sure that the point is brought home, I'm going to divert this component of the discussion to what Angie said originally, which is the autoimmune disease, when she asked, is that something that's different among the different types of cancer? So no, it's not. Autoimmune means the immune system itself is fighting itself. Okay, that's an autoimmune disease would be something like scleroderma, systemic lupus. Those would be autoimmune diseases, okay? Even an allergy can be classified as an autoimmune condition because it's a hyperimmune response where the body sees something in itself that may or may not be what we call a hapten, or you know, let's say a foreign body, and creates a hyperimmune response to it, such as like if somebody gets stung by a bee and there's not a big deal, but another person gets stung by a bee and they have a massive anaphylactic reaction, they can't breathe, et cetera, because the body sees that reaction as something that's foreign and goes into a hyperimmune response, okay, as opposed to, say, a hypoimmune response. A hypoimmune response would be a response that is basically dumbed down, okay? So in cancer, you see a hypoimmune response, or in people that are diabetic, you see a hypoimmune response. So you have a hyperimmune and a hypoimmune response, but both of them are not what we want. We want a appropriate immune response, and that comes down to one of the three foundations of health that I talk about in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away. So the first foundation is the systemic detoxification, you know, to basically get all the things out of the body that shouldn't be there. The second one is physiological optimization, optimizing the physiology of the best possible state that we can, and then immune modulation, right? So immune modulation, meaning that if we take a hyperimmune response and we make it into a immune response, or basically a normal immune response, or you take a hypoimmune response and bring it up so that it's a normal immune response. So you don't want to have a hyperimmune response, you don't want to have a hypoimmune response, you want to have a normal response. So an autoimmune disease is where the body sees itself as it's self-destructive, it sees itself as something that's foreign and starts to fight itself, or it sees something in the body that is introduced into our system and reacts to it in a hyperimmune response. The cancer cells, that's not an autoimmune issue at all. Okay, so I thought I'd just mention that since you brought it up. So you cannot have a cancer present unless you have a compromise to your immune system. Your immune system, in other words, has to be damaged if you have cancer. If you don't have an immune system that's been damaged, then you can't have cancer. So if you have cancer, by definition, you have a damaged immune system. There's no way you could have gotten a cancer unless the immune system was damaged. So that's the first fundamental component. So when Kay asked this question, and she says, this cancer goes into remission, but comes back, and then the treatment starts all over again. We are unsure whether to do this treatment and once in remission, start getting his immune system healed to kill the cancer cells. So if he requires the treatment to start over and over again, and then it goes into remission, then comes back again, was his immune system ever properly fixed? Because if the immune system is properly fixed, then you shouldn't have a problem with the cancer, right? The problem is that the cancer comes back because the immune system was never really addressed. It was never really fixed. So either the immune system is, one, damaged to the point that it can't mount a response, or two, it's not recognizing the cancer as foreign, and so it can't respond to it. It can't fight it effectively. So when, and I probably don't need to then go into and explain the relevance of these comments that I've made based upon this question, but you know, just in case somebody is not connecting the dots, if you have any type of treatment that you're needing to do on a continuous basis or you need to do on a periodic basis, the question that you have to ask yourself is the actual causation of that problem, has it actually been addressed? Has it been effectively identified and negated? Has it been addressed in an appropriate enough fashion? Because my contention would be that if it keeps on coming back and then goes into what we call remission, all remission means that there's no response going on right now. That doesn't mean that you're, you know, it's working. It just means that there's no response. In fact, I know our treatments are working when the patients start to get sick, when they start having a response to the treatments that we're doing. That tells me the immune system is recognizing the cancer as foreign and it's not fighting. And that fight is what causes the person to feel like a train hit them, you know, whatever the case may be. There's a whole bunch of things that people experience, and that's called a Herxheimer's response. But basically, when the immune system recognizes the cancer as being foreign, it mounts a response, wakes up, and starts doing its thing. Okay, so that's really one of the things that we want. So when a person's getting a treatment and they go into remission, meaning there's nothing going on, that, to me, that doesn't mean that there's any effect from the treatment. It just means that, you know, all quiet on the Western Front type of thing. So if the problem keeps coming back, goes to remission and then comes back and recurs, and it goes into remission and recurs, my question is, does that seem like that there's any effectiveness going on there, or are we just dealing with a placation type scenario that we're just, you know, waiting for something to happen? Does that seem like that anything was really done if it keeps coming back? If every year, every other year, it keeps coming back and then goes into remission and then comes back and goes into remission, does that intuitively, just based upon, forget about intellectual cognitive function, just based on your own emotional intelligence, your intuition, does that make sense? Does it seem like it's doing anything? And I just want to, you know, if you guys are in agreement with me, and if you don't believe that, you know, if feel free to argue with my point if you don't agree with it. It's always interesting to see what people think. Yeah. So Richard said, no, it doesn't make any sense. It's not healing, Andrew said. It's just timeout. Richard said, that's exactly right. Okay, so there's a bunch of questions that were asked here. Are some organs more susceptible to cancer than others? Yes, something to do with the lack of anti-tumor necrosis. We discussed that already. So what makes one cancer cell more aggressive than another? So this again comes back down to the response of the individual and what the system is seeing as foreign. Certain cancers are more aggressive than other cancers, and it's not because the cells themselves are more aggressive. It's basically because of the tissue area and where they're, the type of tissue that they originated from, or where the proximity of that cancer is that make it more aggressive. And they grow faster because they're in, like, prostate cancer is a very slow growing cancer, but a glioblastoma is a very fast growing cancer. So is it really this cancer that's different, or is it the tissue where it originated from that allows it to be more rapidly expandable or able to metastasize because the type of tissue it's in? And that's actually what it really comes down to. It's actually this common characteristics of cancer, and then what makes one cancer more aggressive than another cancer, like melanoma, pancreatic cancer, or glioblastoma is more aggressive than, say, a prostate cancer or something like that. It's actually not because of the cancer cell itself. It's because of the tissue that the cancer cell originated from and where it occurred, and that's what makes the difference. Okay. Physical, chemical, emotional stress is absolutely right. That is a big contributor. Question is, if a child has fewer allergies, then they basically have an autoimmune condition. That's exactly right. If anybody has an allergy, that is a type of autoimmune condition. That's right. It's considered a mild autoimmune condition, albeit a mild condition. It's still underneath that category of autoimmune because the body is seeing something in itself as being foreign. And it could be it could be something foreign, but it could be something that's in your own body that, you know, like people that get spontaneous hives or something like that. It's because they had a contact from, you know, new soap detergent or something, and they were allergic to it, or they were hypersensitive to it, so they get the urticarial type of response. So, again, an allergy is a type of an autoimmune condition, right? So, the question, let's see, no, it's not healing. Barbara said, no, I agree, it's just a cycle, not addressing the root cause. Definition of madness is doing the same thing with no change, like Andy said. That's right. Einstein's definition of insanity was doing the same thing, expecting a different response. That's exactly right. So you guys already understand intuitively that doesn't make sense, and yet that is how many of the cancers are dealt with, right? One of the things that really, really is aggravating to me is that when you see how medicine deals with people that have cancer, they will say, okay, we need to do a CAT scan, we need to do, you know, CAT scan, whatever it is. And then they'll do the chemo, they'll do the radiation, they'll do whatever, and then they will give them this bill of clean health, that, okay, cancer's in now in remission. And then they're told that they need to do a CAT scan every 3 months, or every 2 months, or every 6 months, or whatever it is. Usually it's every 3 months, and then after a year or so, then you go to, you know, every 6 months, and then they basically keep this track where you basically go and get a CAT scan every 6 months or a PET scan every 6 months just to see what the change is, what's going to happen. Here's the problem with that. That's kind of like somebody told you that, hey, there's been a incidence of robberies in your neighborhood. You need to be aware. You need to have a high index of suspicion and be prepared. Now, what makes more sense to you? Setting your alarm for 3 o'clock every morning, or every other morning, or every third morning, or whatever, and getting up and looking out the door and saying, okay, looking out the window saying, okay, no, there's nobody breaking, there's no cancer here. Doing that every third day, does that make sense? Or does it make more sense to get a dog or get an alarm system or get something that warns you if there's an intruder? Unfortunately, in modern medicine, our mentality is somebody's just broken into a neighbor's house, or there's a high chance, higher likelihood than normal that somebody may break into your property. And how do we now deal with that issue with the higher potential chance of getting cancer or somebody's concerned with cancer? What do? We set our alarm, and every 3 months we look out the door to see, is there anything there? Is there anything there? Is there anything there? That's not prevention. That's not being proactive, okay? Do something so that, God forbid, what happens if that cancer doesn't show up at that schedule? What if that person's going to try to break into your house at 4 in the morning, right after you looked, right? Right after your alarm went off. It's, in other words, it's insanity to try to deal with something from a preventive level by setting an alarm and checking to see if it's there. You need to do something proactive. So what do we do in proactive when you deal with cancer? Okay, you got to improve your nutrition. You got to detoxify your body. You got to eliminate certain things out of your life that are contributing to the cancer or the likelihood of getting cancer. And that's a lot of what we talk about in some of the videos on cancer. And I'm going to be doing more videos about this. And this is actually part and parcel of the book that I mentioned before that I'm in the process of writing, which actually I haven't written anything in there for the last 3 weeks. So I'm getting further behind in that. But anyway, life gets in the way, right? So anyway, the point being, again, is that we want to be proactive, and we want to take certain components, certain actions, certain steps to gain control of our situation so that the cancer cannot be a problem. This is a very, very, very big dilemma that people have, because they don't know what they should do proactively to prevent cancer, okay? But there are many things that you can do. And again, I'm not going to go into those details here. I can't, because legally, somebody can construe this as medical advice. But on the IADFW, we will continue some of this line of thought regarding this topic. And we'll talk about some of those things that can be done from a preventive level. All right. So let me... answer some of these questions. So Richard said, follow the money, big win for the drug companies. So that's actually an interesting comment, Richard. So when you look at the actual statistics, it's about $135 billion right now is what they, I think actually this is data from probably, I don't know if it's 2000 or 2010, I think it's 2000. But at that time it was about $137 billion or $127 billion, something like, well over $100 billion. It was like $120 some billion that the cost of care, as far as the cancer business is concerned, that's the cost of that's the industry we're talking about. That does not include all the research that is diverted towards cancer. Something like from the National Cancer Institute, I think the number is over $5 billion every year. The National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society. The American Cancer Society, I think, is like $3 billion.